Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, October 30th, 2010. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be the host today. As you know from the time on the calendar, we're a day ahead of Halloween, and of course this is a pretty scary time of year because we've got the elections coming up. But next Tuesday, America will go vote. And while we don't in many cases have viable alternatives, we do have two candidates on the phone with us today who are going to talk about their campaigns, but more importantly, talk about what it means to provide leadership at a moment of a profound breakdown crisis. So we'll be joining very shortly by two candidates, Keisha Rogers, who is the Democratic nominee in the 22nd Congressional District of Texas, and Summer Shields, who is an official write-in candidate in the 8th Congressional District in California. Now, before I bring them on, though, I just want to set the stage for you to make sure that our listeners today have a clear sense of what this election means. The election in itself doesn't mean a whole lot. What's important is the strategic conjuncture in which we are living. And this is a conjuncture that's been defined and forecast every step of the way by Lyndon LaRouche. And today he was very explicit as to both the danger and the solution to the crisis. The danger is we've already entered a zone of hyperinflationary blowout of the whole financial system. And for those who were listening to this show in the past and said, well, isn't LaRouche exaggerating? I don't see the hyperinflation. Well, unless you're Ben Bernanke, and I don't think Ben Bernanke would see the hyperinflation if it started growing out of his rear end. Unless you're Bernanke, you see the hyperinflation. There's the collapse of the dollar. There's the skyrocketing of commodities prices. But more importantly, there's the explosive growth of debt of all sorts, especially the bailout debt, the TARP and so on. At the same time, we've seen a takedown of the physical economy. That's hyperinflation. And what it means, as Lyndon LaRouche spelled out today, is we're going to have food shortages very soon. What we're seeing with cholera spreading in Haiti, we're going to see all over the world very soon. Unless we get Barack Obama out of the White House immediately, using the 25th Amendment, and at the same time then introduce the measures that Lyndon LaRouche has specified, you can kiss civilization goodbye. And so that's what's important about next Tuesday. We'll have a situation in which many incumbents will lose their seats, including people like Barney Frank, who's in danger, including a number of people who are really not the worst people in the Congress. But there's an explosion of anger in the population. The question is, what are the solutions? And that's why I'm so happy to be able to welcome to our program two of the only candidates who have actually been presenting solutions. So, Keisha and Summer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harley. Hello.
Let me start with you, Keisha, because you continue to rock the political environment in this country. Your victory in the primary was an upset. It shocked people. It didn't shock you and me because we knew what you were doing. But the so-called political class had just assumed that anyone running in a Democratic primary calling for the removal from office of Barack Obama had no chance at all. Now, since that primary election, which was way back in March, you and a very dedicated team of LaRouche Youth Movement activists and occasionally a few older people such as myself thrown into the mix have been out in the district covering it thoroughly. Have you gotten this message across, do you think, in this district that Obama has to go?
Oh, absolutely. And I think when we first started the campaigns, Summer, Rachel, and Boston, and myself, we started with the campaigns as Mr. LaRouche outlined, and as we got together and we decided that these campaigns were going to represent the leadership which in society, which is no longer present. The campaigns were going to represent a presidential-style campaign to provide the solutions, provide the calm leadership in a time of crisis. And since we started these campaigns back in January of 2009, we've seen that that leadership has become more and more vital, and that what has been represented by this administration, by this president, has been continued insanity and disregard for true value of human life. And you can see this in every single policy that President Obama has put forward. And more people have recognized, as we're out on the streets every single day, door-to-door rally deployments, intersection deployments, going into senior citizen homes, going to university campuses, that there is no true leadership out there being represented except for what we're calling for, because we've had the guts to tell the truth and to stick to principles from the beginning. And so what you're seeing is that when I started my campaign here on the platform of saving NASA and impeaching Obama, more and more people have realized that there's going to be no solutions as long as this president remains in office. And since that time, you've seen this become a reality in the face of the population, where the president has continued to cut the funding to our manned space program, where you've seen the atrocity he's committed toward the nation of Haiti in a time of devastating crisis, where you have cholera spreading throughout the nation, and he's refusing any support or help there. You've seen with the continued bailouts of Wall Street, and we're even right here in our own country, where we are looking at the collapse of cities and states and police officers, firefighters, and teachers, and so forth, being laid off along, you know, and we can go down the list of just insanity that has been created.
Well, Keisha, let me ask you a question on that then, because it's clear from even from the polls, and I usually am skeptical about polls, but it's clear that Obama is sliding rapidly. He probably, if the truth be told, is probably in the 30%, 35% range, even though most polls show him at 40, 45. I think a lot of people are just afraid to say that they don't like him because they think they might be considered racist or something else. But let's assume it's even 40%. Now, in your district, which is considered to be a Republican district, it's clear the Republicans would like to see Obama out. That is, except for the Republican congressman incumbent, the incompetent incumbent that you're running against, Pete Olson, he's refused to take up this question of Obama, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And every single policy that Obama has put forth, he's backed all the way from the cutting of manned space flight to defending the Taliban, the opium crops in Afghanistan, and so forth, to the bailouts of Wall Street. Every policy that Obama has put forth, my Republican incumbent opponent has continued to back. And they're doing this because the Republicans are doing this because they're pulling the same stunt that the Democrats did in 2006 when we were calling for the impeachment of Bush and Cheney and removal of these guys from the presidency. The Democrats, starting with Pelosi, Summer can tell you more about that, the opponent of Summer, said, no, impeachment is off the table. And they said, we're going to ride in on the anti-Republican sentiment and destruction of the nation the same way that the Republicans are doing today with Obama, saying impeachment is off the table.
And let me ask you, when you say that, Keisha, we've had several cases where you or campaign representatives have asked him, what about the impeachment of Obama? What does he say?
He said, there's no cause. We don't need to do that. There's no reason.
Okay, well, he's exposing himself openly as someone who, as you said in a release, would rather see people suffer and use their suffering as an issue than offer an alternative.
Right, because it's a political gain. It's more about their political gain than it is about protecting and saving the nation.
Let's bring in Summer here for a moment. Summer, you're running against the person who should be very famous for her role in defending Bush and Cheney, even though she was in an opposing party. From your campaigning in the district, and you've done an enormous amount of work in the city of San Francisco, which is mostly the district, do you find many people who still support Nancy Pelosi?
I don't find anybody who supports the woman based on her policy. Everyone who we've run into will agree that she, what Keisha was bringing up, that she did block the impeachment of Dick Cheney. Everyone knows that. That you still had the, even though given her position as Speaker of the House, you still had the funding of two wars that were Bush-Cheney wars. Now they've turned into Obama wars, and that she's refused to do anything on the home foreclosure issue, including a moratorium. And now she's just kind of putting out these statements that she's for a moratorium on foreclosures after the decision by Bank of America to freeze foreclosures for a short period
after,
of time.
And after 2.5 million families have lost their homes.
Exactly. Exactly. And everybody on the streets knows that the woman's corrupt for the most part. And generally, people who support her still, which there are these few, these very few kind of dodo bird phenomenon where they won't exist for much longer, but they still exist. And I would actually say that the last few percent that still support Pelosi, that keep showing up in these polls, do probably live in San Francisco, and even that grouping doesn't fully support her any longer, that essentially that she is only liked because people don't know who she is in any way politically.
And Summer, you've also emphasized in your campaign, and we'll talk about this more in the second half of the program, but I'd like to just introduce it now. You've been emphasizing the importance of the infrastructure program that Lyndon LaRouche initiated or reinitiated as a driver, namely the North American Water and Power Alliance, NWAPA. Have you been able to get people in San Francisco to recognize the importance of these kinds of infrastructure policies as opposed to the so-called stimulus and bailout policies of Pelosi?
Absolutely. If there's one thing that every American, I think, understands, it's that work and employment is not just busy work, but it means real industrial work, real development. We've managed to do is we've tapped into a whole segment. Keisha has NASA in her district, but we've been able to tap into a segment here in San Francisco that remembers when the harbor was open in San Francisco, remembers industry in San Francisco, and the outlying areas of San Francisco with Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. We've been able to tap into scientists there, including talking to the highest level officials, people who are working with the petawatt laser program, and we were able to discuss these types of policies, the North American Water and Power Alliance, with people who are working actively with the inertial confinement laser system in Lawrence Livermore. So it's really a rich area, and not only that, it's rich in culture too. We've been able to intervene into international politics just by actively campaigning and working in San Francisco, most notably with China.
Okay, you're listening to two Democratic candidates, one of whom is on the ballot. Keisha Rogers is on the ballot in Texas. If you're in the 22nd district, I assume you're sane because you're listening to this program, so you should make sure that you get as many people as you can to vote for Keisha on Tuesday. And if you live in the 8th district in California in San Francisco, you can vote for Summer. But in a couple minutes, I'm going to have Summer spell his name for you because you have to write it in. And this is a real test for a somewhat illiterate population, but I think we can teach them that. Now, if you have some questions for either Keisha or Summer on their campaigns or on the broader strategic and scientific questions of the day, we'll take your questions, send them in to radio@larouchepub.com. That's R-A-D-I-O, radio, at LaRouchePub, LaRoucheP.com. Now, Keisha, you put out a statement, actually two or three statements in the last couple of days, emphasizing the absolute urgency of getting the 25th Amendment activated, the Section 4, which would remove the president for incapacity to fulfill the duties of his office. Tell us a little bit about the response you're getting on that and why you think that's so important.
Well, first of all, the 25th Amendment, as has been made very clear by Mr. LaRouche, economist Lyndon LaRouche, is the only option that we have left to saving the country. Because there's going to be no, as I put forth clearly in my statement, there's going to be no economic solutions to the devastating crisis which is hitting the nation unless we get this insane president out of office. And we've seen every step of the way that more and more has been made clear that you have a president which, as LaRouche defined back in April 11th of 2009, with a narcissistic personality of the type of Hitler and Emperor Nero. And people, if you are honest in that way and you say it clearly and directly in that way, people understand the threat that the nation is faced with, and are happy about the fact that we're providing a solution to get out of it, that we don't have to sit back in fear that we're losing the country and there's nothing we can do about it. What we can do about it is we can take the necessary steps of the 25th Amendment, which is, as I call, or as should be known as, the sanity clause to oust an insane president. And you can take Article Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, which will require for President Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden, and leaders within the institution of the presidency to come together and say, look, this president is no longer fit or qualified to lead the nation, and we can move forward on getting the president removed expeditiously, immediately, and very calmly and quietly. And then after that, we can take the necessary steps needed for reinstating Glass-Steagall, for going with NAWPA to put millions of people back to work, and putting the nation back on the track toward true economic recovery and progress.
And Summer, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would say that what Keisha's bringing up is absolutely the case, and it's been increasingly, we've seen something similar here, an increasing recognition from the population that the man has to leave. And it's something that maybe at first we're not getting hugs and kisses or anything, especially in a city like San Francisco, which is largely Democratic, but no one defends the man. No one will defend him. And in the beginning, people would try to defend him, but now there's nothing to defend. And I've seen this actually been quite scary, how insane he's been acting. And you have the instance on the Jon Stewart show. And then in several different occasions, people are beginning to see exactly how the man is on the verge of cracking. So when Lynn brought up that the man is on the verge of cracking, we bring it up to people out here, and people see it.
Now, why don't you just give us a little bit of a sense from your standpoint of what the Haiti situation represents? Keisha brought that up before. I think this does make a compelling case that the president had the evidence he needed back in February from groups like the Army Corps of Engineers, the Doctors Without Borders, other kinds of groups, that you couldn't just deliver some Band-Aids and a few bottles of water and some tarps, but you actually had to do something more profound to protect and defend the people of Haiti. And we now see the cholera epidemic that's spreading. I think you put out a statement on this also, Summer. What did you say? What's the important issue that people have to come away from this Haiti disaster with?
What it shows is the criminal malfeasance and the genocidal criminal malfeasance of this president. And the fact that he was warned by Lyndon LaRouche, warned by people associated with him, warned by people in his cabinet, that if nothing was done to move, to take care of a number of about 1.5 million Haitians and relocate them from an area where they're living in their own feces, filth, disgusting conditions, that if nothing was done, then you would, of course, have a cholera outbreak, and this would be a genocidal death, that the president literally did absolutely nothing, sat back and refused to do anything on the Haitian question, which is the height of irony, since Haiti, a nation founded by free slaves, were looking to the first supposed African-American president of the United States to come out and help them, and he's done absolutely nothing. And it shows the criminal malfeasance, but the total disregard for human life by a president with this narcissistic personality disorder. And it's extremely frightening. The reports we're getting from this Osterman guy, who's the blogger, about the mental state of the president from the White House insider, it gives a kind of inside scoop on what we already knew based on his actions when it came to particularly what is going on with Haiti.
Now, Keisha, when you began this campaign, I'm sure that you had certain ideas of what a campaign would be like and what you had to do to move people. But what I think is interesting is that both you and Summer, and also Rachel, was doing the same thing, recognized from the very beginning that this is not a local campaign. In fact, the discussions that the three of you had with me and with Mr. LaRouche made very clear from the start that since Lyndon LaRouche is now 87 years old, 88 years old, he's not going to run for president. But he's the one person who still knows what to do. That you represent, in a sense, his voice as leaders of a presidential campaign, even though you're running in a district. How has that shaped the way you've looked at what you've done in terms of the statements you've put out, the events you've had? Just give our listeners a little bit of a sense of what you've accomplished with this campaign.
Well, I can say that throughout the campaign, I mean, we've provided leadership not just in the region and the district which we represent, but, I mean, I've been called into to go on to various radio shows across the nation. We've seen publications and newspapers and magazines about what we're representing in the campaigns. And just throughout the entire process, it's been a fight and a challenge to the population to recognize that we're really without leadership. And what we're looking at is not just a short-term fix or how you're going to have a campaign that's going to just represent a district, but leadership that recognizes that the entire financial system is disintegrating and that the solutions that are require an understanding of leadership represented by those such as President Franklin Roosevelt. And we have really exemplified the leadership of those people such as President Franklin Roosevelt, such as President John F. Kennedy, and President Lincoln in a time of crisis, and people see that. And so we have media reports picked up all over the place, but more important, people are calling into the campaign. Support is coming in from all over the country of the various campaigns, my campaign, Summer's campaign, and you have people who are giving us encouragement, not just to be local representatives and local leaders in the places where we're running and the districts we're running, but to actually provide this leadership even after the campaign is over, because this is not just about an election. This is about the direction of where the country is going to go from here on out. And we have taken a commitment to represent a presidential-style campaign, which means that we're providing the solutions in a time of crisis when there's no solutions that are being provided and are willing to tell the truth. Most people are just going to go along, as we've seen this Congress, in a tragic state of capitulating to popular opinion, which we refuse to do. And so you've seen that as we've stood firm on our principles and telling the truth and saying that there's no solutions as long as Obama remains in office and we have to get him out with the 25th Amendment and so forth, look at what the Congress is doing. They're saying, well, that's too much. We're not going to go with that because it's not popular enough. But they're out of reality with the population because if you're looking at the rate of disregard or disgust with this presidency and the policies of this Congress, is becoming more and more apparent that the population wants real leadership, and that's what we're representing.
Yeah, there's a total rebellion in the population against the Congress. We saw a number of incumbents knocked out. We see incumbents running for their lives, whether it's Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, who tried to do the right thing on the financial reform bill, and she was shot down by Obama and Geithner and Barney Frank. So we've seen
I think if we had a popular referendum, you know, which is an election, but, you know, if we had to decide whether or not Obama would be out of office immediately, with his approval rating right now, I think the population would make a clear decision if they were to choose the 25th Amendment and push that through, that he would be gone.
No, he would definitely be gone. And also, Keisha, you took on this question of national leadership. You played a very significant role at the recent Congressional Black Caucus conference in Washington, where there was an effort made initially by a person who I won't name because he's a fairly despicable media personality, but he tried to rally the crowd against you, and he failed quite miserably. Give us a little report of what kind of response you got at the Congressional Black Caucus, which, by the way, I should add, occurred at precisely the moment that Obama and forces allied with him were moving against three very prominent Black Caucus members, Maxine Waters, Charlie Rangel, and Eddie Bernice Johnson, using the old J. Edgar Hoover racist frumentioned targeting. So you went to the Black Caucus convention in the middle of that. What was the reaction you got from people?
Well, that's important what you just said, because that's what we made clear at the Black Caucus, that it, in the midst of the worst economic crisis seen and the fact that there's no real leadership coming out, you have a president that is targeting the leadership, which is actually trying to act to defend their constituency and the forgotten men and women of the nation, the poorer populations, by going after and explicitly targeting Black elected officials. And so when I went in with the call for Obama's removal, impeachment, and putting forth sound solutions on how we're to do that and what the steps are to actually stopping this economic collapse by ending the bailouts and going with an FDR solution, we got really positive responses. I mean, I'll tell you, people were freaked out because they didn't want to have to admit that maybe people did make a mistake. Maybe we let our popular, going along with popular opinion or, you know, what the media put forward, that hope, you know, the hope and change honeymoon was finally coming to an end, and people didn't want to admit that. But I'll tell you, at this conference, this Congressional Black Caucus conference, people had to come to the reality that, wait a minute, if I take a step back and really look at what's going on, you know, I can go back into my district or into my city and state, and Detroit and Chicago and Philadelphia and everywhere else across the country, I'm going to have to face the reality that we're losing everything, that more and more people are being foreclosed on, that firefighters, police officers, and teachers are being laid off and not giving the adequate support and funding they need. And they have to face this reality that the president isn't doing anything to address this crisis. As a matter of fact, as a puppet of London and Wall Street, he was doing everything to make it worse. And so people recognize that we were willing, that I was willing to go in and tell the truth, that you have a president that's targeting Black elected officials in the time of crisis, and also, which is completely frivolous charges, because these are officials that, you know, if you really look down on, I mean, in, at the core of it, were people who were not supporting his policies, or you had people who were such as Congressman Rangel and Maxine Waters that were Hillary supporters, and others that didn't kiss the rear of the president or go along with every one of his commands. And so he decided that he was going to go after these individuals. And when I brought this up at the convention, people had to recognize that this was true and had to, you know, actually say that, you know, what we're saying is telling the truth and providing leadership when other people are too afraid to say so. So I think it had a really positive effect. And as a matter of fact, afterwards, I was asked to do several interviews. A couple of college newspapers wanted to interview me on the subject of getting Obama out and the economic policies. And also, when I got back to Houston, a newspaper that was there, a magazine, the Style magazine, actually interviewed me. And they actually put a very good article in the front cover. So we got a lot of positive responses from that.
And Keisha, just so people know, where do they go to see your website, and what will they find on your website?
Oh, well, my website is Keisha for Congress. That's K-E-S-H-A. Everyone says I spell my name wrong, but anyway, no, it's K-E-S-H-A for Congress, and you can go on the website, and what you'll find is several videos of various policy workshops that we've had, town hall meetings, videos actually giving people a sense of direction of what it's going to take to get out of this crisis, the solutions to get out of this crisis. And you can go and share this with your friends and family. Sit down with people. You'll find a video that have been produced on NWAPA, the North American Water and Power Alliance, and what we've been doing to get this out throughout the population, and also on the NASA, fully funding NASA manned space program, and what this means as a turnaround toward real physical economy and productive jobs in the nation again. So you'll find a lot of material there that people can go and share with their friends and family.
Okay, I'm joined today on the LaRouche Show with by Keisha Rogers, who's the Democratic nominee for Congress in the 22nd District. You've just been hearing from her. Also, Summer Shields, who is a write-in candidate for Congress in the 8th Congressional District in California. Summer, what does it mean that you're a write-in candidate? Why don't you tell people what they have to do to vote for you?
Well, it means you have to learn how to spell my name correctly.
And I think our briefing writers had some problems with that at a couple of times.
They sure did. And as a matter of fact, in the beginning phases, I campaigned with a sign that said my last name spelled with an E before the I instead of the I before the E. It means that you have to write my name, and my name is Summer Shields, and you have to spell Summer, which is like the season, S-U-M-M-E-R, and Shields, like a shield, S-H-I-E-L-D-S. And sometimes it's more or less difficult to know what the I becomes before the E or not. And it also means that if you live in San Francisco, that there's a certain easier procedure where you can request a list of the official write-in candidates put out by the Secretary of State of California. As soon as you go into the poll, you can ask for the sheet of official write-in candidates, and they'll show it to you, and you can take it with you into your voting booth and vote for me by writing my name in. You actually have to write it on the line at the bottom that says write-in.
And so you're what's known as an official write-in candidate.
That's correct. I'm an official write-in candidate, which means that if I wasn't, then the votes of you writing me in wouldn't count. But I'm an official write-in, which means I did the petitioning. I went out. The citizens of San Francisco wanted me to run, so I got them to sign my petition. I got a nice swath of people from all over the district, from all walks of life, to sign the petition, and I'm an official candidate in that regard. So your vote will count, even if you're not just bubbling in something. You can write my name in. It will definitely count.
And it's clear that Nancy Pelosi did not want you on the ballot.
That's absolutely the case, and it's clear, and it's absolutely clear.
Now,
why?
Let me get to one of the reasons why it's important that you're on the ballot, which is that when the campaign began, Lyndon LaRouche emphasized the importance of the San Francisco race, not just because of Pelosi, but she's got to go, but because of the potential to run a campaign in San Francisco that would emphasize the theme of the four powers, that is, the potential of the United States at a moment of breakdown of the transatlantic civilization, to turn to the east, to look to Russia, China, and India, with major infrastructure projects. Now then, as the campaign unfolded, we launched the Flank for the North American Water and Power Alliance, and your campaign, in a sense, is the central theme, as Keisha's campaign is NASA and manned space. What's been the result, the response, both on this question of four powers and then also the emphasis on infrastructure, great infrastructure projects, as the alternative to a hyperinflationary collapse?
Well, that's really the idea of the four powers, as presented by Lynn, is a very beautiful concept that's really grown and blossomed in my own mind, given this campaign here, where instead of taking the four powers and NAWAPA as separate, what we did is when we had our four powers event, thanks to what the good work that the team down in the basement has done, LaRouche's scientific basement team, that we were able to combine world development with cooperation among sovereign nation states. And what we've managed to accomplish with this is, on the one hand, San Francisco is strategically located, facing towards the east. It has a history of cooperation just in terms of with the eastern nations, just in terms of the demographic makeup. You've got a huge portion, a fairly large portion of two of the four powers in question, which are Russians and Indians, far more Russians than Indians, but you've got a huge portion, probably about one-fifth or more of the city is Chinese, and they have a gigantic Chinatown, which we've had a lot of activity in, which is about 100,000 people who live here, and these are people who have very close relationships with China. When we would do something inside of the district in Chinatown, like hold a press conference, immediately national Chinese newspapers would pick up on this and it would be covered around the world. And so Lyndon LaRouche is very familiar, the people of China are very familiar with the name Lyndon LaRouche. And so the idea of world development and the idea that this campaign represented to bring NAWAPA to the table, but turn it into policy, and only as the first step towards world development, and bringing up the point that you had, Russia had already put forward the option for cooperation with the United States on building the Bering Strait tunnel across the Bering Strait from Alaska to Siberia. This had already been put forward. What we've been able to do is hammer on the fact that if the North American Water and Power Alliance becomes policy for the United States, immediately you'll end up with a chain reaction of development. Instead of what you've got is a chain reaction collapse of the economy, you'll have a chain reaction of development that'll spread all the way across Asia through the kind of development project that NAWAPA represents, into through Southwest Asia, right into Africa, and the development of South America as well. You're talking about the kind of development that we've never seen on the planet Earth ever before. And that's what this campaign represented. And a lot of people came around and flocked to that idea, especially a huge outpouring in the Chinatown here, where we had almost a seemingly anomalous occurrence, which is that a number of older Chinese women, ended up attending our town hall meeting. And they were totally against Pelosi, totally in favor of the development of these various regions that we were discussing, and really moved by the idea of Qin Sha Wei Gong, which is Chinese for the world exists to serve the people, or the general welfare policy. It's similar to the general welfare policy as expressed in the preamble of our U.S. Constitution.
And Summer, let me ask you on this development question. You have had an occasion to travel to Africa where you got a chance to participate in conferences and see the kind of potential for development there is there. Of course, Africa has been subjugated by colonial policies, particularly of the worst racist sort run by the British Empire. But you saw the potential, the desire for these kinds of changes. Do you have any knowledge that your campaign is somehow being registered in Africa from what you've done?
What I definitely know is that both my campaign and Keisha's campaign, it's being watched, and it's being watched by the same people who have invited us to Africa. It's being watched by the people who are yearning for the kind of development that we have put on the agenda by our campaigns, and that the feedback from that is I'm getting right now. We happen to get one of the guys who invited us to come out to Sudan before. He's here in San Francisco right now with us on a trip sponsored by the State Department, and he's been watching the campaign, so he knows what we're up to, and he understands that. And honestly, I don't think that the breakthrough with the Organization of Islamic Conferences to build a rail link from the Port of Sudan all the way across Africa to Dakar, Senegal, that the decision to construct this about a year ago now, I don't think that ever would have been a possible. I know for a fact it wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for the intervention that Linda LaRouche made to say that the primary developmental, the primary initiative for Africa to allow Africa to survive as a continent would be the development of sound transportation and the development of agriculture. And the development of this rail link and the corridor that could produce is absolutely critical. But none of that's going to be possible, and this is increasingly understood with Obama in office. There's so much potential right now for greatness, and there's also so much potential for chaos, depending on what we decide to do as patriots and leaders. And what myself and Keisha are doing is that we represent that tradition. And if it's the case that one of us ends up in Congress, you can be sure that there's going to be a fight through that medium to put in place these policies, and immediately it opens up. And I can guarantee, I know I can see Keisha as the Democratic nominee for the 22nd District of Texas, that she's definitely being watched, and people are ready for that kind of tradition, that kind of development of the United States, that kind of real historical fight that we represent to be in there.
Well, let me just add that there's a conference this weekend in Chad, which is in Africa, one of the places that would be a beneficiary of the TransAqua project, a major infrastructure development project with water, restoring Lake Chad, winning back the desert. And two of your colleagues from the LaRouche Youth Movement, Portia from Germany and Sebastien from France, are participating in the conference, and hopefully we'll be getting a report on that during the next couple of days on the various LaRouche PAC websites. Now, Keisha, Summer discussed this whole question of the NWAPA and the global reach. You have, in addition to supporting that, you've had a special role in this campaign, given the decision that was made by the president back in January and February of this year to end the manned space mission, except for some wackadoodle idea of landing on an asteroid. So how does this expanded NASA policy fit in with this global infrastructure picture?
Well, first off, what we're actually inspiring people with is that we actually have to think about the highest forms of creative potential of our society and of human beings. And that is not what is represented by Obama or my opponent, Pete Olson, because as we're representing a revolution in science, they're representing the shutdown of scientific potential. And you see with the fact that the president is calling for, you know, cutting the funding or, you know, saying that we're going to go with less energy-dense projects of solar power, wind power, and funding these types of research projects, or something insane as landing a man on an asteroid instead of going with potential for colonizing the moon and colonizing Mars, is a turn backwards from the scientific potential that we can represent. And, I mean, I was just talking about this in a meeting a few moments ago where, I mean, you look at the developments that are coming out, the potential that we have on what we represented, what was developed on the first moon landing that was made possible by President Kennedy, and where it was just a vast empty land where we didn't know what to expect. Now we're seeing all types of great potential, the potential for mining helium-3 on the moon, or the potential for life on the moon because of the findings of more water, potential for water and resources there than we're seeing on the Sahara Desert. I mean, this is bringing a lot of excitement. And so what we can do with the North American Water and Power Alliance is we're looking at not just how you're going to create more water, how you're going to create the ability for irrigation and canals and projects greater than the Tennessee Valley Authority, but this is going to be a whole transformation process of how the human mind relates to the environment in which it lives, how human beings are to transform the entire biosphere. And what we can accomplish in doing that is going to be the launching pad for looking at our development of space and developing other colonies throughout the solar system. And this is something that the president and my opponent and others have been completely against, this conception of the creative powers of the human mind to not only be able to go in, and we're not talking about NWAPA as just a small jobs creation program, but this is going to completely transform the way we relate to the entire biosphere, the way we relate to other human beings, and it's going to represent a quality of mind that hasn't been really seen in quite some time. The quality of mind represented by great geniuses such as Kepler and Einstein and so forth.
Keisha, let me just ask you a question, because this comes up with a lot of people when they organize. There's for some reason, because of the littleness of the population under the conditions of brainwashing of the last 40 years, when you talk about a Mars program, you see some in the media say, oh, this proves that Keisha Rogers is a wingnut, a whack job. She wants to go to Mars. Now, that means John Kennedy was a whack job or a wingnut because he wanted to go to Mars. How do you deal with this problem, this littleness? And you know, you come from a state, Texas. You're a native Texan, where Texans think everything's bigger. But so many Texans have had their brains shrunk in to the point that they think Pete Olson's actually a real viable candidate. How do you deal with this kind of littleness? And I think you just did in the way you brought this thing up, but give people a sense of the way you talk to someone who's so frightened of something that's unknown.
Well, you can actually take them through a discovery, give them a sense of what it truly means to be human. And one of the things we do to deal with the littleness in the population is we express a quality of true beauty to them, that the idea of the creative potential of the human mind can be expressed through a classical artistic musical composition. And so when we're talking to people and they just are completely, they're all about their bubble or their box, their fishbowl, their small world, and they don't want to hear about the reality of what's going on, the potential of what we can accomplish, we give them a sense of what it truly means to be human. And we sing classical musical composition to them. We actually give them a sense that, you know, what we're talking about is not just something that is some distant future thing that can never be known, but also that what we're fighting for is not to be gained in the immediate short-term period. That's not what your life's about. But we really challenge people. I mean, this requires challenging people on their sense of human immortality, what it truly means to be human or what it means to be immortal from the standpoint of, you know, people who went to the moon, people who actually risked their lives, and the astronauts and so forth that were able to accomplish the mission of going to the moon, that wasn't all they were out to accomplish. They were out to develop a sense of a bettering society. And, you know, they didn't know whether or not they would be able to accomplish that in their lifetime, but they did it because they were committed to a mission. And this is the sense that we have to give people, that, you know, what they do today, they may not be able to see the results of it in their lifetime, but what they do is going to have a lasting effect on generations to come, and give the next generations a sense that you are fighting for them to have a better future, for them to have a better life. And this is what this Mars Project represents, is, you know, people say, well, you know, it'll never happen in my lifetime. Why should I even care? I'm just concerned about what I can accomplish here and now. That's sort of the baby boomer sentiment. And we tell people that is not a real sense of what you represent as a human being in society. And your focus should always be on bettering society for the next generations. And, I mean, that's what we have to challenge people with. It's not always the easiest thing, because people are looking for a short-term fix, but it's really a fight that we have to go out with.
But then we see something, Keisha, like the miners from Chile who benefited and survived because of a cooperative effort that included very prominently people from NASA.
Yes, Johnson Space Center right here in my district. And if Obama had his way just a little bit earlier, we don't know what the results would have been in shutting down our space program and denying that type of process to take place.
We've got just a little bit more than 10 minutes to go, and I want to come back to this question of Obama. Let me pick this up with Summer, because you've been also campaigning very strongly for the invocation of the 25th Amendment. And what Linda LaRouche said today is that if we don't get Obama out, the situation may shift after the elections for the worse, because what you'll have is a president who, as a narcissist, is not going to be able to handle the rejection that he's going to be given by the population. And yet we see now the danger of terrorism, the fact that they would use terror with this so-called weapons of bombs that are being shipped supposedly on planes. Summer, just give people a sense of why it's so urgent that this be done, that we don't have till January, or we don't have until 2012 to remove this guy.
Well, I think that it's clear what Linda LaRouche said, that the man is basically at a point of a nervous breakdown, is pretty clear. He seems like he's yelling in his speeches. He didn't, as again on the Jon Stewart show, it's interesting because the man wasn't laughing. And he really, you could tell that he was mentally in some sort of rageful state. And I recently wrote this in an email statement I sent out, but I echoed what Mr. LaRouche said, which is that go a little further down the line post-election, and this man, maybe even before the election, but that the man himself is in the kind of scenario where he could move for a Hitler type of dictatorship as a result to being refused by the population.
This is the Hitler in the bunker analogy that LaRouche has drawn.
Exactly. Further and further from reality. He's talking about things that just aren't true, and in a total response could say, let me now slam down on the U.S. population and impose a dictatorship in the middle of the biggest economic collapse the world's ever seen, which is fully underway. And when people, we don't know what dam's going to burst first, as far as I'm concerned. You've got people who are living on food stamps, record numbers of food stamp recipients, record numbers of house seizures, and record numbers of people who are being pushed, at least a large number of people who are being pushed below the poverty line. It's 1 in 7 people below the poverty line, and upwards of 40% unemployment in whole counties in California and also throughout the nation. It's a very dangerous time period. Obama is totally incompetent and increasingly insane.
And Summer, we saw recently on the LaRouche PAC website an interview with someone who's been working with your campaign, Brian, out in Oakland, who's a school teacher, who gave a very compelling report of the breakdown of an urban center in terms of the violence, the shutdown of the police department, the poverty. Do you see the same kind of thing in San Francisco? Because most people have this image of San Francisco as a yuppie haven. What do you actually see out on the streets there?
What we're saying is we got a lot of poverty on the streets. There's whole sections and segments of San Francisco where people are living in subsidized housing and people who are losing their benefits. As a matter of fact, we had a labor recycling approach to the city labor by laying off a whole bunch of these city workers and then rehiring them at reduced wages, or if they're refusing to take those wages, taking in younger people who are willing to work at reduced benefits because the city of San Francisco is going bankrupt. And despite that, the city is still trying to figure out, through one particular measure, how to cut the benefits of city workers. And there's the debate over whether or not they're paying too much for these things or not, and that's not really the debate. That's not how the debate should be had. The playing field on which it should be had is on the federal level, that all the states are bankrupt. California's bankrupt, not just San Francisco, and that this thing is breaking loose, and you see it in San Francisco. You do have a number of poor people on the streets here, and you've got a number of rich people too, but a lot of these rich people are the ones who are signing up with my campaign because they're saying that they themselves are having difficulty trying to afford to exist.
Mm-hmm. Keisha, let me come back to this then with you, because we have, let's assume that Joe Biden gets the gumption along with a few others to move in and remove Barack Obama. What should be done immediately? What's the Keisha Rogers plan, the LaRouche plan for restoring the nation?
Well, once that happens, then we should call an emergency session immediately, or the first order of business in the lame duck session for Congress should be reinstating Glass-Steagall banking law, of Franklin Roosevelt 1933 Glass-Steagall banking law, so that we can put an end to these bailouts. We can actually start to protect our bankrupt cities and states by giving them the support that they need, bailing out the cities and states, and giving funding our hospitals, our teachers, our doctors, our firefighters, police officers. And then we can move on to going for the development of the North American Water and Power Alliance, which will allow us to put 3 to 5 million people immediately to work in productive jobs and transforming the entire North American continent and be a model for the rest of the world again. And as Ms. LaRouche just stated, this is the policies of what we've represented throughout the campaign, representing the LaRouche plan and model for a return to physical economy and physical production and shutting down this whole monetarist way of thinking. And this would be the step and direction that we should take as a model, not only for the United States and the North American continent, but the entire world.
Well, Keisha, the time is short before the election. It's just Tuesday. Why don't you give our listeners a sense of what you and your campaign team are doing and what they could do to help you in these last couple of days?
Well, come on out with us. What we're going to be doing is we're going full steam ahead in the next 3 days. Today we're having rally deployments over in the Clear Lake area of Houston, Clear Lake area, Johnson Space Center. We will be out and about in the district. You'll find material on my website on how you can join on Tuesday evening for election night. We're going to be in the district over at Pearland at the Busy Bee Cafe, and you could join us there. And it's still not too late to contribute. And what I'll say in just ending this before we get off is, you know, we were talking about this earlier today, what our commitment is. And, you know, the reason I'm running is that I'm not just running for an election campaign. We're running because we're in a fight to save the country. And, you know, just thinking about it, most people have put us down, Summer herself, as being those leaders, those people who will go down in history as the first African-Americans who are calling for the first congressional candidates, calling for the first African-American president to be impeached. But what we're calling for is we're in a fight for a true renaissance and a fight to save the nation. And so that's what our commitment is going to be to actually averting a dark age and putting the nation and the world back on the track toward real scientific and creative progress. And so people can participate in that, because even after the election, no matter what happens, we're going to still be out there fighting. And a real leadership in the population is going to be more necessary than ever.
That's what I was going to say. It's going to be more important than ever for people to be out there giving you the backup and giving Mr. LaRouche the backup. Give your website again, Keisha.
Keisha for Congress, K-E-S-H-A, for Congress, F-O-R, Congress.com.
All right, and Summer, what about you? You got some things planned for the next couple of days?
Yeah, we do. I think Keisha and I will go down in history as the first patriots to call for a manned Mars mission in history in this way during a congressional election in a time of crisis where the nation was falling apart. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be out on the streets, similar to what Keisha's doing. We've been doing it. We've been going all over the city to all the different neighborhoods, singing and getting out this pamphlet that I've been distributing, showing people what a real candidate's talking about. Real policies, very clear LaRouche plan. This is how we're going to get out of this thing. We're going to continue to do that. We're going to try and get on as many radio stations as possible to get people to fight and press for the 25th Amendment to be utilized before this Tuesday, because if we can get the 25th Amendment put in place by Monday, then the Democrats stand a chance to get in there and do something worthwhile. If they don't, they're going to get slaughtered in this election, most likely. The ones who aren't fighting for Glass-Steagall will. So we're going to continue to push that, get out and fight for this policy. And I also think what is notable is that we have the basement crew, what they've done with Lyndon LaRouche, is they've made an extremely obvious case for why space travel and what we were talking about earlier, the manned Mars mission, is not just something extra, but it's something that we actually don't know anything about life on Earth or anything about human beings until we decide to go in this direction. And so what Keisha and I are fighting for is the only possible alternative for humanity.
So minimally, if a Democrat wants to win on Tuesday, they should say to Obama, take your endorsement and shove it, but go one step further and remove him with the 25th Amendment. That would be the right strategy.
Yes.
All right, well, I want to call our listeners' attention to the fact that next Saturday, that is the Saturday after the election, Lyndon LaRouche will be doing a webcast at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be called After Tuesday. And the obvious point is there's going to be a need more than ever for people to hear what Lyndon LaRouche has to say, because whatever happens Tuesday, it's not going to resolve anything. if Keisha and Summer are elected, I think you've heard enough from them to know that they'll be in there fighting. But what's going to be up for grabs, if Obama's still in office, we're going to have a slim chance of saving this country. But the saving the country will depend on rallying behind the 25th Amendment and the LaRouche Plan for Economic Development. So mark your calendars right now. Next Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the LaRouchePact.com website, Lyndon LaRouche will be addressing the nation and the world on the subject after Tuesday. Summer and Keisha, thank you so much for joining us today. I think everyone got a real sense that there is leadership in the country. You've got to just look at the LaRouche PAC website to find it.